All right, I will talk about dark matter clusters and galaxies from rotation curves. And most of the work in this area in the past few years has really focused on dwarf and low surface brightness galaxies. But that's what I'll focus on in this presentation as well. The reason most of the work is focused on this kind of galaxies is that for most realistic mass to light ratios, these galaxies are dominated by dark matter pretty much throughout their whole disk. So you can see that very nicely in this particular mass model. The red line here is the contribution of the stars, the green that of the gas, the blue of a dark matter halo, in this particular case an NFW halo. And you can see that for this galaxy, the dark matter really dominates at all radii. So that makes these kind of galaxies really exquisite laboratories to study dark matter in the galaxies, properties of dark matter and the models of the galaxy formation. And of course, one question that has received a lot of attention in specific is whether or not dwarf galaxies and low surface brightness galaxy rotation curves are consistent with the predictions from CDM. I'll quickly mention the H1 observations. That's where this whole game started with. And they looked at what sort of inner slopes are compatible with these observations. And you find that a whole range of observations, a whole range of inner slopes is compatible, ranging from all the way to zero constant density core to as steep as R to the minus 1.5. And the real reason for this is not so much beam smearing, because that can easily be corrected for or incorporated in modeling. But the reason is that with a resolution of 15 to 30 arc seconds of H1 observations, the resolution is just not high enough to really sample down to the smaller scales you need to measure the inner slope. So that's where H-alpha observations come in. You have a much higher resolution of 1 arc second, so you can probe the inner slopes with much more accuracy. And there have been many, many studies in the past few years, and I'm sure that these are not even all of them. And these studies really try to focus on testing lambda CDM, either through mass modeling or through a direct measurement of the inner slopes. And there has been some disagreement between these studies, especially on what sort of inner slopes are compatible with the observations and which are not. And one way to measure the inner slopes is to try and derive a density profile directly from the observations. So if you assume that these galaxies are dominated by dark matter, which is quite reasonable, that the mass distribution is spherical, and that essentially there's no non-circular motions or that they're not important, then you can use the formula for the enclosed mass and for the rotation curve to get an expression for the density. And as you can see, that depends on the derivative of the rotation curve, so you may imagine that any density profiles will be rather uncertain. So if you then do this and look at the derived density profiles for some 15 galaxies, you can see that indeed in the inner parts, the error bars get very, very large, so you can't really measure the density profiles very accurately. So if you then look at these profiles and try to fit an inner slope, a straight line to the inner parts of the density profile, measuring the inner slope in that way, you find that you see a whole range of values, you know, from galaxies that are close to constant density cores to galaxies that have very steep inner slopes. And the dotted line here is an R to the minus 1. So you see that the observed measurements span a whole range of values, essentially all the way from 0 up to 1 and a little bit higher. Key question now is, what does it say? What does it tell us about the intrinsic inner slopes? And to understand that, you need to have a look at the systematic effects that play a role here. And there's quite a few that might play a part here. If you have, you know, seeing and slit width, these will tend to dilute the inner slope. As a result, you'll, you know, find a lower inner slope, so you get an underestimate. Same thing if you have a slit offset. If you don't put the slit on the kinematic center of the galaxy, you'll miss the steepest part, so again you get an underestimate of the inner slope. If you take use a traditional analysis to measure a rotation curve in edge-on galaxies, it will, you know, go wrong basically, because, you know, in an edge-on galaxy your line of sight will traverse the entire disk, so you not only pick up your rotation velocity, but you also pick up gas in other parts of the galaxy, which will be lower. So if you then just simply fit a Gaussian to it, you'll again find an underestimate. The H-alpha distribution is a bit more of a subtle effect. Basically, if you don't have H-alpha formation on the major axis, but it's slightly offset, then you'll get a lower velocity, and that's especially important in the centermost part of the galaxy. And then finally, you have non-circular motions, which could go either way. But if you combine all this together, you really find there is a very strong observational bias towards finding shallower slopes. So if you take these systematic effects into account, you can compare your measured, the distribution of measured inner slopes to with the distribution you'd expect to see if you take the seeing, the slit width, possible offsets, and other systematic effects into account. So the histogram here is the distribution of measured inner slopes for a sample of some 30 galaxies, taking the galaxy to the most suited, so illuminating edge-on galaxies, barred galaxies. And what you find, again, you know, you have a range spanning from 0, a little bit below, to 1 and above. In the distribution you'd expect, if you assume that the intrinsic inner slope is r to the minus 1, also shows a very wide range. And the observed distribution is actually very compatible to the expected distribution. And you can repeat this game for different inner slopes, and you find that inner slopes from 0 all the way up to 1 are pretty much consistent with the data, but steep as r to the minus 1.5 is definitely ruled out. With this knowledge, if you then revisit a result by de Blok et al. From 2001, and they found, you know, for a sample of some 50 galaxies, that it was a very strong peak near r to the 0, roughly, so constant density cores. So this, at the time, seemed like very strong evidence against cusps in low surface brightness galaxies. And if you now eliminate the edge-on galaxies and a couple of galaxies with strong bars from his analysis, you can see that this peak entirely disappears. So it was artificial, this peak. And if you compare it then again to the distribution you'd expect, if the intrinsic inner slope is r to the minus 1, you can see that the observed distribution and expected distribution are very compatible. And just lastly, it was a different study doing something very similar by Speckens and Giovanelli, who used a much larger sample, but again studied some 160 galaxies, all, you know, towards the low surface brightness and dwarf end of the galaxy distribution, measured the inner slopes, and, you know, taking all the systematic effects into account, also calculated the distribution they'd expect to see. And you can see that if you assume that the intrinsic inner slope is r to the minus 1, you get a very good match between the observed distribution and the expected distribution. They also repeated this for a number of inner slopes and also find that anything between r to the 0 and as steep as r to the minus 1.25 are consistent with the observations. So summarizing the results from long slit data is that basically inner slopes in a range from constant density core all the way up to r to the minus 1 and a little bit steeper are consistent with the observations. So we can then try to eliminate some of these uncertainties, some of these systematic effects, by not using long slit data, but go towards using two-dimensional velocity fields, because there you have much more information, no more uncertainty about the slit position. And you can map the H-alpha distribution, and you can also map non-circular motions. So one example is this particular galaxy, DDR39, which we at the time selected because it was very regular. It was a very regular optical morphology, very regular H1 kinematics. So it seemed like a prime target to get a high-resolution rotation curve for. So, so we did that. We derived the rotation curve for this galaxy and then tried to get an estimate on the inner slope for this particular galaxy. Here we took a slightly different approach. we didn't invert the rotation curve to get a density profile, but instead we took a generic halo form in which alpha is also, the inner slope was also a free parameter. And for a fixed mass to light ratio, we then made a number of fits for different inner slopes and plotted the reduced chi-squared as a function of inner slope. Thank you. And you can see that when we do that, we find that basically fits in the, between 0 and 1 give a roughly similar quality of fit. The difference in the profiles here is, you know, the original rotation curve we derived and one with a fiducial correction for non-circular motions, for random motions, I'm sorry. Another thing we did for this particular galaxy is to fit an NFW halo. And we find that we can actually get a very good fit for this particular galaxy, but the concentration parameter we find with C of 5 is on the low side of what we'd expect. However, you know, the quality of the fit is similar to for a constant density core. A fit with a higher concentration parameter of order 10 is clearly inconsistent with the observations. It really overpredicts the slope here and underpredicts the velocities in the outer parts. We have more galaxies. This is still a work in progress. Again, we try to measure the inner slope as a function of the, we measure the chi-squared as a function of inner slope, and we again see that we have a plateau and a large range of inner slopes is consistent with the observations, although lower values tend to be preferred. If we make NFW fits, some of the fits are, you know, lower quality and over-predict in the inner parts. But, you know, for most galaxies, it works fairly well. But again, we find concentration parameters that are on the low side of what you'd expect. Now, there have been similar studies. Rachel Kuzier and I did a sample of some 11 low-surface brightest galaxies. Here you see, you know, some of their data, optical image, velocity field, the derived rotation curve, and the comparison to other data. And here the mass model that they fitted, where the solid line here is an isothermal halo, and the lower short dashed line is an NFW fit. They found again that they could get NFW fits for most of these galaxies, but for four they couldn't get any fits. They also find that NFW tends to not do as well as isothermal halos, and also that the concentration parameters are again on the low side. Another study was by Simon et al., actually with two different studies. They have high-resolution H-alpha fields with obtained with DensPAC. And they did a somewhat different approach towards getting the inner slopes. They fitted a power law to the entire rotation curve, which is somewhat different than really focusing on only the inner parts. And to demonstrate, you know, the difference between the various methods, you know, they found, for example, for NGC 2976, an inner slope of 0.27. If you invert their rotation curve, and, you know, like I did earlier, and then fit a straight line to the inner parts, you get roughly 0.5. And if you do the game where you do for different inner slopes, you find that anything between 0 and 0.6, 0.7 seems, you know, consistent with the data. So summarizing results based on two-dimensional data is that the inner slopes are still poorly constrained. Fits tend to prefer halos with constant density cores somewhat over NFWs, and the halo concentration parameters tend toward low values. And these results were actually also derived from long-slit data already. Now, another thing you can do, of course, with these two-dimensional observations is to have a look at non-circular motions, and to see to what extent they play a role and how important they are. So this is, again, DDO39, the galaxy I showed you earlier, that we selected because of its regular appearance. So we're rather surprised to see that when we investigated this data more closely, that there were actually evidence for strong non-circular motions here. Here you see the normalized line of sight velocity for along a ring in the plane of the disk. This is for the inner parts. What you'd expect to see if there's pure circular motion is that the points would follow this sinusoidal curve, but instead they don't. You can clearly see that here they deviate rather strongly. There's clear evidence that there's non-circular motions for this galaxy. And if you go towards the outer parts, you can see that the points nicely do follow the expected curve for circular motion. Now, such non-circular motions aren't only confined to DDO39. They're actually rather common in dwarf and low-surface brightness galaxies. 4 out of 5 in Simon et al.'s study have them. The 4 out of 6 in the galaxies we studied, and in a separate survey by the GASP people, they found that also the majority of galaxies there have clear non-circular motions. The key question then is, you know, what causes these? There's a number of suspects. Probably the very probable is energy input due to star formation activity, but possibly also structure in the disk, small-scale structure in the disk, or halo might play a role. Vertical motions could be interpreted, you know, misinterpreted rather, as in-plane motions. And all of these tend to be rather stochastic in nature, which is not so much a problem if you're trying to get a rotation curve in the outer parts, because there you can average over a large ring. But in the inner parts, it may affect your derived rotation curve. So that makes life harder if you try and measure the inner slopes accurately, because it means you need to get a large sample of galaxies to get a handle on the true underlying inner slopes. On larger scale, other effects may play a role, such as, you know, triaxial halos that we've heard about, vars and spiral structure, lopsidedness. And these two, if present, need to be dealt with. And one simple way of doing it is that once you see the evidence for a strong non-circular motion, to simply not include them in your further analysis. But probably a better approach is to make models that include all the information that you have and try to get a model that includes these effects. And then once you do that, it would also be, because what has happened in the past sometimes is that people just basically gloss over these non-circular motions, assume that they're not strong or not relevant, but if they are present and play a role, and if you just derive your rotation curve in the old-fashioned way, then you may have a rotation curve that's incorrect. You would, as a result, derive incorrect conclusions about the underlying dark matter distribution. So what we need to move towards is that we move away from the one-dimensional rotation curves and make use of the full data set that we have, so the full two-dimensional velocity fields, or better yet, the three-dimensional data cubes. So that brings me to my conclusions. The observed inner slopes in dwarf and low surface brightness galaxies show a large spread and are uncertain inherently because we're trying to measure something in the inner parts of the rotation curves where the relative uncertainties on the derived rotation velocities are largest, also because of systematic effects that play a role, and because of small-scale non-circular motions. Looking at the data presented here, we find that inner slopes in the range of 0 all the way up to about 1 are consistent with the observations. And because of all these effects here, it's basically not possible to measure the inner slope reliably for individual galaxies. The halo concentration parameters, on the other hand, because they are derived from the rotation curve as a whole, not only from the centermost parts, can be measured much more reliably. And for the galaxies for which we've done so, and others, we find that the halo concentration parameters tend toward lower values. And then finally, non-circular motions are common in dwarf and low surface brightness galaxies and really need to be dealt with either statistically or by including the effects in the modeling. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Shall I just throw it?
Hi, Randall Way speaking. I'm just wondering if the H1 data also suffers from non-circular motion, or is that different in some way?
Sorry, if the what?
The H1, neutral hydrogen.
Oh, yes, it's the same thing. It's it doesn't really matter what the tracer is. And in fact, we have observations for, this particular galaxy, DDR39, with a similar resolution as the sparse spec data, so it's VLA, B array data at 5 arc seconds. And the non-circular motions are exactly the same in the H1 as in the H-alpha. I can plot them on the same scales.
Hi, James Taylor. So something just occurred to me with the concentrations. I presume when you say the concentrations are low, you mean if you took the average value predicted from one of the models, then they'd be low compared to that. So these are a subpopulation of galaxies. I wonder if it's possible that they are, in a sense, things that formed recently, where you'd expect the halos to have lower concentrations. So I guess maybe one question would be, is there an old stellar population in these things? And how does the fraction of old stars compare to objects of a similar total luminosity?
Yeah, I haven't done that particular exercise for these galaxies, but my understanding is that many of the dwarf galaxies do have older populations. So in that sense, you wouldn't expect them to be young.
Old populations, wherever you look hard enough, even in this room. Stacey.
Hi, Rob. I think you've convinced me that non-circular motions are important, at least at very small radii, and I'm wondering if you'd address how far out you thought that was important. And also, you describe all of the observational uncertainties we should worry about, but I also wonder if you'd comment on the physical effects of what the baryon mass is, and as we just heard from Oleg, what effect the adiabatic contraction might have.
As you go farther out, you can start averaging over a larger part of the over the disk. So definitely the small-scale non-circular motion you wouldn't have to worry about anymore. Still, if you get things like a significant bar in a galaxy or potentially triaxial halos, those would persist over larger radii. So just deriving a rotation curve from that, especially if you do it the usual way where you start weighting data towards the major axis, you may get an incorrect rotation curve. Adiabatic contraction will also be a factor here. I've used the old Blumenthal method. So different correction schemes may result in different answers, but I'm not sure whether it would really change the result that dramatically. But it's something to look into.
One more question if anybody wants. If not, no. Glenn.
Hi. Glenn van der Vaan. Yes, so. Is there any hope we could go to stars to do the same kind of things? So to prevent the dissipation and nature of the gas?
Yes, and that's some studies are underway, but as you may understand, because these galaxies have low surface brightness, getting the stellar kinematics is excruciatingly hard. But with instruments like, for example, SPARSPEC, it is possible, because it has 5 arcsecond fiber, so you can really try to get as high signal noise as possible. Wait a little bit and hopefully we can get an answer. But it's definitely, you could avoid some of the uncertainties there. But in your larger scale asymmetries, triaxiality bars would still be visible there as well. So you can't sidestep everything, but it would definitely be a step forward.
Okay, thanks very much.